This morning I'd like to continue with the theme of investigating dispassion. Viraka. That investigating dispassion, I breathe in. Investigating dispassion, I breathe out. At that directing attention to that quality of fading away, of allowing the mood or feeling, particular feeling, to be experienced from a place of dispassion rather than passion, rather than the holding, clinging, constant affirmation of a particular feeling or mood or view, that one comes to attend to it with this quality of dispassion. So much of what our how we experience ourselves and the world around us is completely generated by the inner biases, inner kind of holding. And we constantly believe that, constantly work from those assumptions and that position. So that with mindfulness of breathing at this point, really trying to look more clearly at the way that we are viewing or the kind of emotional tone of how we're perceiving something, and can we put that down? Can we set that aside? Can we have dispassion towards a particular feeling that we're experiencing right now? No, and and if we can't, then it's a very clear indication of the kind of clinging, attachment, proliferation. The mind is proliferating with its particular flavor of the moment, and it'll change, and then we'll go on and believe the next thing. It has a certain power at that time, and the whole world seems to be aligned with that particular perspective. But in the light of Dhamma and in the light of the impermanent, changing nature of things, its uncertainty, and then those particular views and feelings and perspectives are, they tend to crumble very quickly. And either we rush back in and support them because they're dear to us, or we go on to the next thing, find some other cause to invest our energy and our obsessions with. And this is mostly how we spend our time. Rarely do we return to a place of dispassion and allow things to settle. To be contemplating the possibility of dispassion, and trying to experience the particular moods and feelings that we have, the particular views that we have. And what would they be if one were truly able to establish dispassion? What meaning would they have? What value would they have? Because that quality of dispassion just gives such a space to the mind to settle and cool. And without that possibility of settling and cooling, then and we just tend to keep the mind spinning. And one of the themes that's very helpful for reflection on encouraging dispassion is the theme of death. Contemplating, in particular, one's own death is the, and to make it very clear in one's mind that this is a very real possibility. it's not just conjecture. And to take it past the intellectual level, because in a certain way, everybody knows that. Everybody knows they're going to die. But most people work from the assumption that it's going to be somebody else first, and not us yet. The soldiers going into battle or something in there, and there may be some fear and anticipation there, but there's. They tend to think that it's somebody else who's going to experience death, the enemy, some unfortunate people on our side maybe, but certainly not us, not me. We make the plans for what one would do after. I remember a few years ago there was a I think it was in Yosemite, there was a, I guess they do, they've been various parachuting clubs and whatnot jumping off a big rock there or something. I guess there's a few big rocks there in Yosemite, and the Park Service was trying to curtail that and saying it was dangerous, and people had been hurt, and then these various people and clubs got together and protest this draconian measure of the Park Service, did a sort of an organized jump over there with the sort of the leader of the group, the head of the group, And you know, they said, well, yeah, you know, parachuting, you know, can be dangerous, but you know, this is certainly not the case. So anyway, they went ahead and this leader jumped off and neither parachutes open, and just sort of splatted at the bottom. And didn't sort of start the day of thinking, you know, maybe I could die. Didn't think that at all. And obviously, this is a contemplation for dispassion. It's a contemplation for restructuring one's priorities and values so that one places Dhamma foremost. It's not a contemplation just to try to make oneself fearful of death and then avoid anything that is a bit fearful or worrisome. I mean, one can paralyze oneself with fear also, but that's not the point of these contemplations. Any contemplation is for the creating this balance within the heart, so that the Dhamma can shine forth, and one facilitates one's opportunity for practice and training as much as possible, so that this contemplation of death is contemplating one's own death and really bringing it up in order to encourage oneself and to spur one on to be cautious, careful, circumspect. Heedful. Appamada is the Pali term of sort of being circumspect, heedful. And the Buddha says that this is a foremost quality in laying the ground for liberation. When this heedfulness or circumspect quality comes up, then the Buddha gives the image of the dawn. In the same way, when one sees the first light of dawn, one knows the day will unfold. It will become light, and the day will unfold. The same thing when one recognizes this quality of appamada, circumspect, heedfulness, kind of a care and attention to things, then one can expect the unfolding and ripening of the Eightfold Path and its resultant liberation. So the contemplations on death are helpful tools for spurring one on in that direction and sort of resetting one's priorities. And again, it lays that ground for dispassion to really cool the heart of its impulses to follow a particular desire, mood, bias, and to return to Dhamma. And to really do that as one breathes in, as one breathes out. really contemplating the image of death and one's own death, the death of everybody who one it's like Larry Rosenberg talking about he said he's a bit of a film buff, so he really enjoys movies and you get various movies and I mean, one night he was I think when he was working on one of his books so working through some of these contemplations, and he got a movie to watch, and it was an old 1938 movie, Clark Gable, Carol Lombard, and he's watching this movie, and it's you know, of course these people are vibrant and full of life, and then he started contemplating, well, gee, you know, Clark Gable's dead, Carol Lombard's dead, every single actor that was acting there is dead. The people who directed it, footed the film, produced it, the people who worked on the sets, everybody, probably everybody who had anything to do with this movie is dead. And everybody dies. And the illusion is one of life and continuing life, ongoing life. Onward and upward life, forever and ever. It's just somehow I'm going to so that really bringing it, you know, we ourselves die, everybody dies, and to not to be making, say, decisions from a place of, you know, as if one was going to live forever, to make one's decisions from a place of yeah, death is certain. Death is a certain thing. Time is very uncertain. The timing of it is very uncertain. And that, you know, one of the contemplations that I've found very helpful and used over time to contemplate, you know, what, as one is practicing, you know, it's a breathing in, breathing out, you know, and what kind of a mood, a mental state, a thought, if this were the last moment of my life, if I were going to die right now, is this the kind of mental state that I want to carry with me into my death? Is this the kind of mood or thought that I want in my last moment? Well, I've always found it just restructures radically what I'm holding on to and where I want to direct attention. Dispassion. And not dispassion in a cool, unfeeling sense. It's dispassion in the sense of a cool, clear, circumspect observation of reality and truth. But dispassion brings us back to the possibility of the mind to be really clear and not be shaken and moved by the moods and thoughts that just endlessly sort of bubble up in the mind. So that reflection on death dying, that is, if I were to die right now, is this a suitable mental state? Is this a suitable thought to be carrying with me? And what kind of mental state do I want to bring to my last moment, to my last breath? And then certainly that quality of dispassion is high up on the list. So to bring those reflections into play. Investigating dispassion, I breathe in. Investigating dispassion, I breathe out. There's a there's a very famous monk in Thailand what he's most famous for, really, is his medallions. They're considered to be extremely potent and protective, and he has huge crowds at his monastery that come to seek blessings from him, because he's considered, whatever he says, say a blessing or a perspective, is something that is auspicious, will come to be. and his amulets are considered very, very auspicious and protective. And at one point somebody asked him, you know, what was besides receiving the blessings and the amulets and the doing the external practice, what's the most suitable way to practice meditation, in terms of meditation technique and method? And he said, "Oh, that's very easy." And in Thai, when they that Burmese method of practice of noting, where one sort of rising, falling, moving, touching, and it's done in a sort of way of question. In a sense, it's actually quite an interesting technique in that way. So that breathing in is yup no, pang no, breathing, breathing out is that question of falling, and it's a question: is it falling? And breathing in, is it rising? And any other thing. And so he said the quickest sort of way he used that, on the in-breath, dai-na, on the out-breath, dai-na. He said, am I dying? On the in-breath, am I dying? On the out-breath, am I dying? And it's keeping that death as the constant theme. And that's probably the most auspicious, protective thing one could ever do, and to be bringing that reflection, raising up that contemplation. And it's something that people don't do. Don't live our lives from a place of recognition of death. One time I went to out to Dao Dam. There this place along the Burmese border that have a retreat center. And it was the first time I'd gone back. I took a group from Wat Nanachan. It's the first time I'd gone back to visit, and there was many of us from Wat Nanachan went along, and they actually hadn't had any monks in there since the year that I had spent the rains retreat, and so it'd been about 7 years there hadn't been any monks there, and the people that were there were very excited to have monks, and one of the reasons they're excited is because many of the people had died during those 7 years, and there had not been any monks to do any proper funeral ceremonies, so that they had buried everybody, and then they wanted us to do a proper cremation for all of the people who had died. And so that in order to do that, the idea was that they would get the villagers would help, and we would go to each grave site and take out a part of the body of each person, so that we do a communal cremation. And so the time was set, the day was set, and we convened to go out to the charnel ground area, and the villagers. I mean, they're miners, they're, you know, tough sort of people who are out on the fringes of kind of a frontier society, and they were absolutely terrified. And so in order to get over their fear of death, of course they were fortified with large amounts of alcohol, and they started digging up the sites, and as we get to the first one, and you get to the coffin, and immediately you sort of knock a hole in the side of the coffin, and then somebody, say it was a person, sort of put their hand in, and sort of just tried to get something. Anyway, the kind of a head came rolling out, and skull came rolling out, and these people, sort of these villagers, just bolted into the forest. They just ran off in different directions, and so we went and got this skull, and then they came back and sort of slop back more alcohol to keep them going, but in the end they were so drunk that they couldn't dig anymore, and we ended up, and they said, that's enough, you know, we'd only did about two or maybe three, and there'd been, I don't know, easily 15, 20 people had died, and there was anyway, that was enough. By the time we did about three, then they were finished, but it was just, you could just see the fear, and it didn't matter sort of how much alcohol they put down their throats, they were just never able to get past that fear. And you know, as monks, it was actually a really interesting contemplation. It was a really nice day outing. To be able to go to a charnel ground and really sort of see death and see the human body. I posted up an article on the board which is similar, that they, well, much grosser, much grander. there was an article about a monastery in Thailand that it's turned into a makeshift morgue and center for, so that people are coming, still, of course, coming and trying to find relatives, trying to find, identify relatives, still trying to, from the tsunami. And then there's a huge number of bodies there, 1,000, 1,500 bodies, huge number of bodies, and they're, of course, they're, as each day goes past, just increasing stages of decomposition. But it's the story of the monks that are living in that monastery, and their perspectives and reflections on living in the middle of a makeshift morgue. And they said their sort of ordinary daily routine is a bit impacted by just the presence of so many people. There's these large groups of forensic scientists who are trying to do the detailing work and whatnot, and then relatives coming, so that they're just trying to respond to the circumstances, and then their morning and evening meditations or meal offerings are all taking place there, and there's this strong sense of this is this opportunity to reflect on death is very priceless, and this is the reality of human existence, and it's beyond what anybody has ever imagined. Conceived of having so much death around, but then bringing it inwards and using it to contemplate priorities and what's important and the nature of human life in general, to be bringing that in, investigating. You know, as we reflect on death and our own death in particular, really trying to keep that contemplation going, there are certain aspects or permutations of that are important to reflect, recollect on. And one is just the resistance that we have to even contemplating death. That desire it's not going to affect us somehow. Distance ourselves from it in a way that it doesn't touch our hearts. Because there is this just very deep-seated, almost on a cellular level, that somehow the desire to not to die. It's nature. But then, on the mind and the personality level, it takes over. And it's always been quest of the great sort of epic quest. This one is for immortality. As the remember Woody Allen line, you know, I don't want to achieve immortality through my works. I want to achieve it through not dying. But that's, you know, that's the feeling in everybody's heart. So to really trying to make it clear that, and yeah, this is inevitable. This is a part. You know, contemplating the death of the people we love, we respect. Of our parents, teachers, you know, somebody like Ajahn Chah, so larger than life. But he's been dead for over 10 years now. You know, somebody who the wisest being that I've met, with the most sort of vitality and kind of presence. And you know, he got sick and he died. Mm-hmm. It's just that is natural, because that's everybody. And the Buddha died a long time ago on that physical realm of the physical body. Death is what awaits us all. And we have to do it. We have to do it ourselves. We'll be alone when we die. You know, whether or not we're surrounded by all sorts of people who are either sort of cheering us on and chanting mantras and meditating, or there's people around weeping and wailing, or there's people around who are indifferent. On a very ultimate sense, we're alone. We have to do that ourselves. We will be on our own at that point. And we need to cultivate the qualities of a balance and equanimity and dispassion and clarity now. It's not something that is going to somehow manifest at that time because we thought it was a good idea. Mm-hmm. It's something that we need to develop, cultivate, and you know, continually bring to our practice, bring to our training. Because when the time comes, it just is. It's not at all what one thought it was going to be. There's a person who does a lot of hospice work, and Rodney Smith, I think his name is, up in Seattle, does a lot of hospice work, does a lot of with dying people, and he said, usually the people who have the most difficult time are the people who thought their death was going to be spiritual somehow, that there was going to be, it was going to be, they had some idea that somehow their death was going to be a spiritual death. They were going to die in a spiritually illumined sort of fashion somehow. Mm-hmm. But you don't, it's a nice idea. But if you're really not cultivating it, living it all the time, every day, nice ideas don't come to much. That contemplation of, you know, as I breathe in, investigating dispassion. As I breathe out, investigating dispassion. Let's say cultivating the qualities that lead to clarity and stability. And a constant returning to that, and not wasting time. How much time do we waste? Either in things that we think are useful, valuable, or things that we're, other people think are useful or valuable. And, you know, in the end, I remember a line of one of Warapunyo's sort of poems, verses, you know, in the end one is cooked and eaten by the king of death. it's a very vivid image, which is helpful to bring up, because it we do need to motivate ourselves. We do need to encourage that quality of making the practice immediate, and to, you know, set our priorities straight, and to really to relinquish what needs to be let go of, and to cultivate what needs to be cultivated. And that one of the qualities which the Buddha praises for cultivation is dispassion. And it's also something that naturally arises. Dispassion naturally arises when we see things really clearly. And we see things in their true light. Those contemplations of impermanence, in all its permutations, right down to us, this person, this being, this body, this personality, this thing we call me, really seeing its seeing it in the light of its death. Offer that for reflection this morning.